So what happened to her? She disappeared. I don't know. I didn't do anything. So it's scared her away. That's for sure. Right? It's the 14th. And when is the final?
Sometime next week,
right? Thursday. Contact me if you're not going to be able to make it that day. We'll make provisions. But that's it, folks. That's it. Two pages of notes, Scantron, the formula sheets for chapters 6 and 10. I'm going to give you another formula sheet today that you can use, essay, and a calculator. It'll be 2 hours, but you can do longer. It starts at 8 a.m., but if you don't make it here at 8 a.m., you get here at 9:30. I'll stick around till at least noon. Any questions on that? Any thoughts? Any ideas? I'm going to do some review either today or tomorrow. Probably going to be both days. Tuesday. I know. Finals week. We are so antiquated. We're just talking now about changing the calendar in 2015. We were the last community college in San Diego County to still have 18-week semesters. The last one. And we are.
But what should it be?
Should be 16 or 17 like everybody else. And we should at least get closer to San Diego State, because what happens now is that we start 2 or 3 weeks before state. Students go to state, can't get their class, they come here. Oh, sorry, you know, you had to add 2 weeks ago. We are so... Oh, something's coming. We got people who are just... they don't have to worry about anything else, but we have to have so much time for the students. Hey, we're not doing too bad. Not doing too bad, huh? That's pretty good. In a few months, 10%, I'll be happy with that. I'm still a big fan of Apple, Toyota. Look at Procter & Gamble.
Since
we bought it, right. It was down to 370 or so, 380. It really had tanked quite a bit. But
I don't know, folks. I have a funny tale on that.
What? I'm sorry?
Is it 671 now?
That's how much we lost.
Oh.
We lost $671. It's $452 for the price. Okay, but look, it had touched 705 and went down to 385. But I'll tell you, I'm still pretty bullish on it. I think it's great.
Would it make sense to buy one share of Apple?
Yeah, sure. But remember, you're going to pay commissions every time you buy. So if you have a full-service broker, they're going to charge you $170, $80. We're going to talk about that today, brokerage firms. So does it make sense to buy one share of Apple? But if you have Scottrade, it's $7 a share. Right? So,
a trade, not a share.
But remember, you don't get the best price. So instead of getting $452, you might have to pay $454 or $453. You might have to pay an extra buck. And they don't show you that on the ticket. You have to ask them. Remember that from chapter 5? Okay, we're going to talk about that today. So, anybody have a good joke? No, I have an end of semester joke on Thursday. Don't want to miss the end of semester joke. It's a very, what?
Or the final.
Well, the final is next week. But the end of semester joke is very useful to students. I told you the Microsoft joke, didn't I?
Yeah.
The Microsoft joke. So let's see, one of my worst jokes. Well, that's my favorite joke. Did you hear about the dumb guy that walked around the world? He drowned. Yeah, and then the dumb woman.
She followed him.
Well, no, she wasn't feeling well, so she went to the doctors, and the doctor did a few tests and said, "Well, I have very big news for you. You're pregnant." She said, "Oh, that's so exciting! I hope it's mine." No, dumb. Anyways, forget it. All right, let's go. That's the joke. Yeah. Well, I told you.
I'm just warming up.
No. It's just warming down. I'm warming down. All right. So I have some handouts to give you. And what we're going to do is we're going to spend. Let me see. What's the end here? Oh yeah, 17. Right. Okay. We're going to spend a little bit of time on each of these. Normally we would have a little bit more time at the end of the semester, but we spent more time than we normally do on stocks both the introduction to stocks and the calculations, which is fine by me. I don't have a problem with that. We spent less time than we normally do on the calculations for options and futures and margining and shorting. And since they're not going to be on the final, you don't care.
And this Series 7, they're throwing Series 7 those. If you take the Series 7, you contact me and I will help you with those. But today we're going to do some miscellaneous topics. Retirement accounts, regular accounts, annuities. We'll then take a look at gold and precious metals, hard assets and collectibles, real estate and real estate investment trusts. So it's a grab bag day. So please feel free to ask questions. But if not, I'll just run through things. If I go too fast, just wave your hand. Anybody still have a question for Baffle the Broker? Still time. If you have a question for Baffle the Broker, just write it down on one of these sheets of paper. It's actually the bibliography. I search high and low, mostly low. Somebody asked me that. That's on the, I just gave away one. So, if you've taken Business 121, you've seen this slide before. Because you got to open up an account, right? Well, you don't really have to, as we'll see, but you're going to want to find a brokerage firm. And then you're going to decide whether you want a taxable account or a retirement account. And for the vast majority of people, I believe everybody should have a Roth IRA. It's just the best deal for the long term. Go ahead.
Roth IRA only for people that are employed by companies?
Yeah, you have to. Well, no, you have to have earned income. You have to have a job. You could be self-employed or an employee, but you have to have earned income. It can't be rent. It can't be interest from a bond or dividends from a stock. It has to be earned income. But there are many choices. There are many, many, many choices. Now, the difference is the taxable account, the regular account, the regular taxable account, there are no limits on contributions, no limits on investment types. You pay taxes every year. Whereas a 401k, an IRA, a Roth IRA, there are strict limitations on contributions. I'll sometimes ask them the question, what would you do with $25,000 or $100,000? You say, I put it in a Roth IRA. No, you won't. Because the limit is $5,500 per year per person. And if you go over that, first of all, if you try to do that, the brokerage firm, the mutual fund company, the banker, would just say, you can't put that much in. But if you wound up having 10 different IRAs and Roth IRAs and putting $5,000 in each, the IRS is going to eventually send you a friendly little letter saying, boy, did you goof up and you owe us a lot of money. Question? Rogelio?
Now, what is Tom?
Your 401k?
Yeah.
You can roll it over into your own IRA.
And that won't count, but you can still put
an extra $5,000. Oh, sure. You can still, but that's separate. The 401k and the Roth IRA are separate. You can put the maximum of the 401k, maximum of the Roth IRA.
Oh.
Now, here are the two different types of retirement accounts, educational savings accounts, medical savings accounts. They're basically the same idea. The IRS calls them all tax-qualified accounts. We're just going to use retirement. Pre-tax and post-tax. Now, if some of you have seen this a few times already, my apologies. But the pre-tax contributions are 401ks, 403bs, traditional IRA. It used to be just called the IRA. Now it's called the traditional to differentiate it between the Roth. The simple, the SEP, the KEO, they all work basically the same way. You put in $100 now, and you get a tax break now. The money grows tax deferred, and then in retirement, it is taxed as income. Which makes sense, because in retirement, you're normally in a lower tax bracket. The post-tax contributions, the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b, we put quotes around them because the IRS doesn't call them that. We call them that. The IRS just calls them a 401k, 403b with post-tax contributions. You don't get a tax break now. No tax break now. But, providing you're willing to wait until retirement, you get tax-free in retirement, which is very, very cool. So, the IRA is actually called, everyone calls it an individual retirement account. It's actually called individual retirement arrangement. The only people who will call it that are the IRS. Everybody else calls it an individual retirement account, but its legal term is arrangement. And it is still the most popular. It's now referred to, as we said, the traditional IRA. Anybody with earned income can contribute to a traditional IRA. There's some confusion out there. People say, oh, you make too much money. No, you can always contribute to a traditional IRA. That's not true of the Roth IRA.
But it actually is true, as we'll see. So, hang on. Yeah, I know. Don't remember, we voted for these bozos, but don't get angry at them, don't get angry at us. So you can normally deduct your contributions. But if you have a 401k at work or 403b at work, and you make over a certain amount of money, you can still contribute, but what happens is those contributions become non-tax deductible. So then they go into the Roth IRA, they grow tax deferred, but on the way out you don't want to get taxed twice, so you have to remember how much you put in non-tax deductible, how much you've already paid taxes on it. Because if you go to take it out in retirement and you don't remember, the IRS has a silly name for it. They call it your basis. You have to remember what is your basis, how much money was already taxed. Because if you don't remember that, and you take it out, the IRS is going to say, oh, pay taxes on it, on the whole thing. And you say, well, no, IRS, I put some money in after tax. I put some money that already been taxed. And it's okay, show us. It was 30 years ago. So that's why you got to keep track of. Luckily now, the brokerage firms and mutual fund companies, they keep those end of year statements forever, assuming that there's no nuclear holocaust. The contribution limits have been increasing. They're up to $5,500. Your investment grows tax deferred. You pay taxes on the money as you withdraw it once you're retired, normally after 59 years and a half. But once you hit 70 and a half, you must start taking the money out. They're called required mandatory distributions. And they have huge penalties if you don't take the money out. It is insane why we are treating our elderly that way, but it's the truth. Say grandma is supposed to take out $2,000 out of her IRA. If she doesn't do it, the penalty is 50% of what she was supposed to have taken out. So they'll hit her with a $1,000 penalty on top of any taxes you have to pay. Now, I have known people, I've seen people who did not do it, did not take the money out. And a few years later, we started having them take the money out. The IRS has never bothered them. So I think what they do is they just go like this. Because what a horrible thing to do to elderly. So if you have any folks, some relatives or whatever, make sure they understand this. Make sure they have a financial advisor. I'm sorry?
You said it was 50% plus taxes?
Well, you're going to be taking money out. You're going to pay taxes on the money you take out. Because, remember, it's growing tax deferred. But the 50% penalty is on top of that. So if you were supposed to take out $2,000, they could essentially hit you, or they could legally hit you with a $1,000 penalty on top of any taxes you were supposed to pay. So it's horrible. I don't know why it's on there. But remember, in the 1950s, when these rules were created, very few people actually lived to 70 and a half. Talk to your erected bozo. And then all the IRA, I'm sorry, congressperson, right, congressperson. Who is your congressperson now? It's Juan Vargas. So he used to be Filner, but now he's the mayor. I'm in the 52nd. I'm up in the OB. So ours is Scott Peters. And this guy actually, he's trying his best. He's his first year, and he came in with real idealism. And now we get emails from him going, it's tougher than I thought it was going to be. And then all the different cousins of the IRA, the 401k, the 403b. 401ks are for companies, private organizations. 403bs for public. That's what we have here at Southwestern. 403b, 457, 401a. And then SEP, simple. 401k, SARSEP is gone. But if you have one, you get to keep it. And the KEO, I love that name. It's actually not called a KEO. It's called HR10 or something like that. I'm sorry? Well, you sit down with somebody or educate yourself. Contact me. I'll give you the advantages. I'm not a big fan of the 401k unless you have a big company. If you have a small company, go with a simple. It's cheap. $10 per employee per year. Plus, if you go with a 401k or a SEP or a simple 401k and you have employees, if you don't make sure that they contribute something, the IRS can come and say, oh, it's top heavy. You have too many rich people putting money in, not enough poor people. We're going to disallow it. They can do that.
What does it mean?
If it's just you, don't have to worry. As long as you never have any employees.
If I have it, do I have to offer it to my employees?
That's right. Then you don't have to worry about it. If you don't have any employees, you don't have to worry about it. But once you have employees, go with the simple. It's cheap, and you don't have to worry about the top heaviness. And then the post contributions, the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k. So here's an example. You put in $100 for your paycheck into your 401k. Depending on your marginal tax rate, 25%, 31%, 35%, you're going to get a break from the feds. In this case, this person is 25% tax bracket. That means $25 of every $100, 25 cents of every dollar, is going to the feds in the form of income taxes. And once you've joined the benevolent machine, or trading your life for your paycheck for the mortgage and the rent and the car payments, many of you are going to be in the 25% tax bracket. So you put in $25. The feds are going to give you $25. Now, they're not going to write you a check. What they're going to do is they're going to take 25 fewer dollars out of your paycheck. You see your paycheck, right? You don't get the gross. You see the income tax withholding. Well, it's going to be 25 fewer dollars. And if you're in the 25% tax bracket in the feds, you're going to be in the 6 or 8% in California. So let's say 8%. So the state of California is going to take 8 fewer dollars out of your paycheck. So you're going to see a $33 government subsidy. Well, you know, it doesn't show it that way. They just take fewer dollars out. So you put in $100 and you see your paycheck reduced by 67. You're getting $100 for $67. And this doesn't even include the fact that some 401ks will match. Some employers will give you $50. You put in $100. Anybody in that? Anybody here got a 401k like that? Nobody? No, it'll be 133. It'll reduce 67. It'll be reduced 67. So we're not even talking about the match. If your employer is matching, that's a no-brainer. That's free money. You need. Who's going to give you a 50% return on your money in one day? You ain't going to get that anywhere except from your employer. So what's the catch? There's always a catch. Well, you pay income taxes on amounts withdrawn in retirement, but people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket, right? You're not working anymore. You're drawing down your savings, Social Security, maybe you have a pension. If you're not in a lower tax bracket, in other words, you're taking tons of money out of your 401k, out of your IRA, congratulations. It is my sincerest desire that all my students, all my clients, and myself have this horrible affliction in our golden years that we're taking too much money out of our pension plans. You understand?
So then why wouldn't we want to contribute to Iraq?
I'm going to get to it. Hang on, man. Okay, it's a good question. So I hope everybody's in that horrible champagne problem. You ever heard of champagne problems? We have too much champagne. What shall we ever do? Throw a party. And what happens if you withdraw the funds before retirement? What's going to happen? You're going to pay taxes, and you're going to hit with a 10% penalty. But there are some exceptions. First-time home purchase, higher education, medical disability, financial hardship, which my understanding is hard to get accepted by the IRS, but I'm sure it's a lot easier since 2008. Okay, so now, the post... I'm sorry? You can borrow money from your 401k also and not take it out. You won't pay any taxes, but what happens if you lose your job? That loan becomes due immediately. I think you get 60 or 90 days. The loan becomes due immediately. So that's it. That's an issue. You can't borrow from an IRA, but you can borrow from a 401k if your employer allows you. Some employers won't let you. But you can borrow from yourself. You have to pay it back. And if you lag, if you say, oh, I'll get around to it, the IRS can say, it wasn't a loan, it was a distribution. Pay us the 10% penalty and the taxes.
So how long do you have to pay it?
I'm not exactly sure what the length is. 403Bs, it's usually 5 years. I'm not sure what it is for, at least it is for us. And I think the employer has a little bit of latitude. Ours is 5 years. Unless it's a first-time home purchase, then you get longer. If it's a first-time home purchase, you get longer than 5 years. It's due immediately. The loan becomes due immediately if you lose your job. That's why I'm not a big fan of borrowing money from 401k. I mean, do it, especially if it's for a first-time home purchase. But it scares me. I don't like that. If you lose your job, now you got to come up with $30,000. You understand?
Yeah. So what does the same thing apply in regards to looking through the bank, like Roth or regular IRA?
Well, you can get a Roth IRA through a bank or, right, or a mutual fund company or brokerage firm, but you can't borrow from Roth. Yeah, it's your money, but it's in a special tax-qualified account. So there are certain limitations and rules that the IRS, you know, well, it's basically the Congress, but then the IRS writes the regulation. The Congress writes the law, then the IRS, the executive branch, has to interpret to the best of their abilities and write the regulations. And then the courts, if somebody takes them to court and says, well, that's wrong, that's not what the law says, the courts decide, yeah, you're right, or no, the IRS is right.
So basically, in regards to that, you know, you get a, at the end, you get a higher, your money gets a percent, a certain amount.
It depends on the investment.
Yeah.
But all other things being equal, and they never are, it's usually better for you to put it into a pre-tax or a post-tax than just leaving it into a regular account. Assuming you have a long-term emphasis. Assuming it's for retirement, or medical savings, or educational savings. But we're just talking about retirement. But there are others, but those are the biggies. The biggie is the retirement. That's the biggest one. Good questions. Am I going too fast? All right, let's continue. So here's the Roth IRA. You put in $100. What do you get from the feds? What do you get from the state of California? You see your disposable income reduced by $100. So why contribute to a Roth IRA, says Priscilla. I said it right that time, didn't I? Patricia, Phyllis. Okay, because the Roth IRA is so cool, folks. I mean, this is just a phenomenal opportunity. If you put money into a Roth IRA, you don't get a tax break now, yes, but on the back end, you pay no taxes. And on a apples-to-apples basis, you almost, they can think of situations where you would, you know, where the Roth IRA is not the best deal, but you almost always are going to do better not paying taxes at all later on in life on all your earnings. But there are other people who don't like them. I think they're going to get rid of them. I think 20 years from now, 30 years from now, they're going to say, no more of these things. If you have one, you get to keep it. And another cool thing about the Roth IRA is you can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. Why? Because you already paid money on those, you already paid taxes on the contributions. So that money is yours. You can pull that out. No taxes, no penalty. Not the earnings. The earnings are going to get hit with taxes and penalties. And what this does with the Roth IRA, it makes it an excellent intermediate term investment account. So down payment for a house, kids' education, very cool. Currently, as the law states right now, when you filled out that FAFSA form, everyone says FAFSA, but it's FAFSA form, right? Did you fill out the FAFSA form? Do they ask how much is in your Roth IRA? No, they don't. So it's currently not used in financial aid calculations, so that's very cool for people who have kids. But let's see if you can follow me on this. A Roth IRA is not for everyone. There are limitations on the Roth IRA contributions. Only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $112,000 or less and married couples with adjusted gross income of $178,000 or less in 2003, it goes up every year, can contribute fully to a Roth IRA. And if you don't qualify, congratulations, I don't feel too bad for you. But here's the law, folks. This is not, I'm not making this up. You can go ahead and still contribute to the Roth IRA. Anyway, go ahead and contribute anyway. And if you find or you know you're going to be above the limit, you then, on the very same day, fill out two sheets of papers, one to recharacterize the Roth IRA contributions into a traditional IRA, which doesn't have the same limitations. There's no limitation on traditional IRA contributions. And then you convert the traditional IRA back into the Roth IRA. On the same day, I've done it for clients. You can't make this stuff up. It's as if they did their best. They stayed up at night, the senators and Congress, bozos, I mean men and women, and decided, how are we going to make it really confusing so people will never understand how to do it? I don't know. And we voted for it. Okay, now, this year it's $5,500. If you're 50 or over, you get to put an extra $1,000. It's called the catch-up allowance. Contributions are limited to the less severe growth salary or the maximum yearly contribution. So as long as you make $5,500, you can put the whole thing in. If you make at least $5,000 in a year, you have until April 15th of the next year, you have until tax day, to put the maximum amount. Your spouse is also eligible. Even if he or she doesn't work, if you got a one person working, the other person not working, some of you are falling asleep on me here. You can get up. So if you're married, you can put in for them, even if they're not working. Make sense? So make sure you put out the maximum, depending on what their age. Now, here's the limit for a 403B or a 401K. $17,500. Now, how many people are going to put that much away? And if you're 50 or over, it goes up to $23,000. Think about it, folks. Young couple just getting started out, two people working. One of you can take your entire salary, stuff it into your 401k, do that for 5-10 years, and the two of you will never have to worry about retirement contributions for the rest of your life.
Except for living in the moment.
Well, the other person, they live off the other person's salary.
Oh, okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
One person? Yeah, of course. It's just, yeah, there's only one. Right, you need to eat. Exactly. Yes. Food is important. Right. Clothing, you don't wear clothing, they put you in jail.
I'm going to starve.
Yeah, they'll put you calling. Yeah, well, I'm going to starve.
I'm just going to starve, you know, just put everything.
No, I'm not saying you should do that. No, you know me, I told you $50, $100 to get started on. I'm just thinking. Think about it, folks. And in 2002, the 2001, that was Bush's first when he got in, he wanted to change everything. There was a loophole. It's still in there. I thought they would have gotten rid of it by now. But if you work for a school district or a hospital or another nonprofit, and you have a 403B and a 457, you can double contribute. I didn't believe it when they said in 2002, oh yeah, we can now double contribute. I don't believe that. So I contacted the IRS. They said, we'll get back to you. It took them about a couple weeks to get back to me. And I contacted a few other places, and it's true. They put a loophole in the law so that if you work at a school district or a hospital or other nonprofit, social service, what? It's the same idea. It's a section of the Internal Revenue Code that says if your employer does this and you do this, the IRS says, Domini, Domini, Sanctus, Spiritus, Spiritus, Sanctus, no taxes.
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
We earn money anyway, right, when we work. So
yeah.
It's taxed already. So
not if you put it into a 401k or a 403b or a traditional IRA.
After.
You're taxed when you retire. No, it just doesn't show up when you're, well, it shows up when you're W-2, but your gross salary is reduced, and then in, I forget what box it is, I think it's box 12, it says, oh, he put $1,000 into a 403b. In your traditional IRA, it doesn't show up on a W-2, but you have the end of year document, and in May, the mutual fund, the brokerage firm, the bank, the credit union is going to send to the IRS the information that yes, this person put in $1,000 into their Roth IRA or their traditional IRA.
But my question is like, okay, so you do that. But if you don't...
I do what? I put money in?
When you're putting it in.
Okay.
If you don't ever put money in, then you're just putting in an account that, you know...
A regular account.
A regular
account, you're going to pay taxes every year on the earnings. You know, first of all, you have to earn it. You pay taxes on the earnings, your earned income. And then if you get rent from a property, if you get interest from a bond or a savings account, you get dividends or capital gains from a stock, you pay taxes every year. You get those earnings. In a 401k, a 403b, a Roth IRA, the taxes are either tax deferred until retirement or, in the case of the post-tax...
So let's say every year you earn,
$10,000 a year.
Off of...
A job.
Like
you have to
the earnings.
It's sitting in a mutual fund.
Yeah, it's sitting in a mutual fund. You earn,
$10,000 a year.
$1,000.
Yeah, so.
So you get taxed every year.
If it's in a regular account.
Oh.
If it's in one of these things,
The IRS says Domini, Domini, Sanctus, Sanctus.
You only get taxed once.
Once you pull it out. If it's in a Roth, you never get taxed. Assuming you wait until retirement. Cool? Okay. Now, if you are in these brackets, $29,500 less for single, $59,000, which is actually not too bad, folks. I mean, that's a pretty good salary. You can get a tax credit for putting $50 a month, $100 a month away into a Roth IRA or 401k. And a lot of people don't know this. And if you don't take that tax credit on your taxes, you think the IRS is going to call you up and say, hey, Joe, you forgot to take your tax credit. No, it ain't going to happen. So if you do your own taxes, don't forget this. TurboTax handles this very well. It'll ask you, did you put money in a Roth IRA? Oh, yes, TurboTax. And then it'll say, oh, cool, you get a tax break. So if you have somebody do them, make sure you bring in your end-of-year statement and say, oh, look, I put $600 into a Roth IRA.
And you can put both, right?
Yeah, you can put it into a regular account, into a Roth IRA, traditional IRA, 401k at work if you have one. Now, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b are similar to the Roth IRA. And we put them in quotes because the IRS doesn't call them that. They just call them that Roth. They just call them a 401k, 403b with after-tax contributions. Your employer does not have to offer this option. If they offer a 401k or 403b, they don't have to offer this option. The problem is the same problem we talked about with after-tax contributions. If you contribute after-tax contributions and your employer matches, those are pre-tax. So you now have two different types of monies in the account. You have money that's already been taxed and money that hasn't been taxed. So you have to remember how much was taxed and how much was not taxed. On the way out, the IRS is going to say, pay taxes on all of it. And unlike the Roth IRA, you can't take those after-tax contributions out until retirement. Whereas the Roth IRA, you can. They're yours. Anytime you can take those contributions out. So I prefer the Roth IRA unless your employer matches your money and you're in a lower tax bracket, it's a no-brainer. Do it. If they're going to give you free money, you put in $100, they give you $50, take it and just keep track of all your statements. Keep track of your, all you need is the end-of-year statement. And they're going to be online forever. So it's not a big problem, but I just don't like it. And then annuities. Have you heard of annuities? Have I told you about annuities? Stay away from these jerks. They're life insurance products designed to provide a guaranteed income. Annuity options include income for a set number of years, for as long as you live, or as long as you and your spouse or some other dependent, maybe a disabled child, lives if he or she outlives you. The amount you get is based on which of the above options you pick, how much you have contributed, how well your annuity investments have performed, and there are two types of annuities. There are fixed annuities, which basically invest in bonds, and then there are variable annuities, which invest in mutual funds, which can invest in bonds or stocks or whatever mutual funds invest in. These people take really high fees. There are some advantages. They can be funded with retirement account dollars or after-tax dollars. Unlike the other accounts, there's no limit on contributions. So if you get a $200,000 inheritance, you can stuff it into an annuity. Interest earned is tax-deferred, and you pay taxes on any pre-tax annuity contributions and all tax-deferred earnings as you withdraw them in retirement. It's the same idea. As with other retirement plans, when you retire, you're likely to be in a lower income bracket. Okay. What's the downside? These people are sharks. They have huge fees, very high annual operating expenses, high surrender fees. You remember the Class B shares, mutual funds, the back-end load? Start at 5%, 4, 3, 2, 1. These start usually at 20%. If you try to take the money out within 5 years, they're going to hit you with 20%. In the next 5 years, 15 or something like that. It's huge. It's horrible. I hate them. But if you're a life insurance agent or a stockbroker, you can do really well because these commissions are huge. And if we have time, I'll show you what they send me because I'm a licensed agent and a stockbroker. They send these things like, oh, we'll send you on a cruise. If you can screw enough people, if you can sell these to enough people, we'll send you on a 7-day all-expense-paid cruise. You wonder why? Okay, so review, regular account, pay taxes every year.
retirement accounts, pre-tax contributions, tax break now, pay taxes later, post-tax contributions, pay taxes. Did I say, what did I screw up? Did I screw it up? Pre-tax contributions, you get a tax break now, I said it right. Pay taxes later, post-tax contributions, you pay the taxes now, tax break in retirement free, and then screw it up. I mean, I'm sorry, annuities. Sorry, go ahead.
You have a 401k.
Yeah.
So you can withdraw tax-free from one.
You could pull the money out of the Roth. The contribution.
When you retire, you can...
Oh, right, exactly.
And
pay the taxes on the other one. Sure, exactly. So, yeah, it's good to have both. I have both. My 403B I put in pre-tax. Mostly because I don't want to deal with that, you know, that basis from the IRS, because it's a pain in the, it's a real pain in the neck. You would think they would make it easy, right? Wrong. Say you have, say you have 10 grand in your IRA, and $1,000 of it is after tax. So you're not going to pay taxes on that $1,000. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just take out the $1,000 first, and then the rest of it would be all taxable? No. The IRS forever is always going to want you to take it out in the same proportion. So if you took out $100, 90 of it would be taxable, 10 of it would be tax-free. And it's going to be that way until you liquidate the account. Why do that to people? Because they can. Okay, so that was retirement account. Then we did it in less than half an hour, which is very good. Any questions? Any thoughts? Did I go too fast?
Huh?
I'm sorry. I'm losing you. I apologize.
Nap time?
Okay. Miscellaneous topics. You want to do real estate first? Let's do gold first. Metals, arts, and collectibles. When you walked into this classroom, did you think we were going to spend a whole lot of time on gold? Or were you hoping we were going to spend a whole lot of time on gold?
No.
No? Some people do. Some people are watching their minds. When are we going to talk about gold? Relax. When are we going to talk about gold and silver? And relax. We'll be good at the end. Is gold a good investment? No, it's horrible.
There's a lot of people investing in gold.
Sure. A lot of people invest in pork bellies, too. Pork bellies are bacon. Which you could do, but... What? Commodities? I did. We talked about commodities. You don't remember? You might have missed it. Commodities. We talked about commodities. Go back there. It's in chapter 14, futures. The problem with gold, folks, is that it is basically worthless. And you look at me and you go, what? Exactly. It's mere speculation. What do we use gold for?
Reserve.
Because people think it's a metal that's valuable, and they're willing to pay a certain amount of money for it. But
supposedly it's now because the money is going down.
Right.
That's why they bring the gold. It's the only thing that's not going down.
Well, no, gold goes up and down, too.
They go down, and the dollar goes down. That's
gold is what we call a hedge. A hedge against inflation. It's protection against economic collapse. It's protection against the world cracking apart.
So it's good to, like, conserve some gold?
I don't think so, but you want to. Go ahead.
But basically, the United States has not so many gold. That's why they tend to bring their...
Does gold pay rent? Gold pays rent?
Yes.
No.
It does?
No.
I'm talking about your gold that you have in your hand. Does it pay rent?
Yeah, no, but you can...
Does it pay interest?
No, but...
Does it pay dividends?
No.
Does it grow?
No.
Does it go out and find new markets?
No.
Does it produce new products?
No.
It just sits there looking cool. It's a very interesting metal. You put it in the ocean, come back 5 years later, it'll still be gold. It's great for your teeth, but they have other things for that. It's great for electronics, but they have other things for that. J.B. Morgan said it best. Gold is money and nothing else. That's all it is. It's not good for anything.
But the gold bullion in Fort Knox, owned by other countries, pay rent.
Oh, okay. But the gold isn't paying rent. In other words, the other countries are just paying for the service of holding the gold. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
And the supposed to be when they you can sell it.
Sure.
To the,
gold is money and nothing else. Now jewelry, people like it for jewelry.
No, no, like it, you how do you say like
when? ¿Cómo se dice en español? Say it in Spanish. Somebody will translate. Somebody will translate.
They
what?
They all, like a bar, like they make a bar.
What about the bar?
Oh,
there are lots of scams.
That's what I mean.
They take lead, paint it gold, and sell it. Oh, that's happened often, folks. Don't get, you know, that happens a lot. And if you believe that the world economy is going to fall apart anytime soon, put a lot of money in these things. Alright? I like Tom Petrino. He's a great writer for the LA Times. If your reason for owning gold has something to do with the end of the world as we know it, shotgun and canned goods probably would be more practical investments. And so you get these survivalists who believe, oh yeah, gold plummets is socialist and those the IRS is going to come after us and the whole world's going to fall apart, so I got my guns and I got 40,000 rounds of ammunition and I got canned food and water, and they don't think. If the thing falls apart, how many million people live in San Diego County? Three. There's what? 13, 14 million up in L.A.? So go ahead, kill 40,000 people who are searching for food. There's another 150,000 behind them. Plus, what are you going to do with the bodies? They don't think. If you really believe this is going to happen, get out of the Northern Hemisphere. Tierra del Fuego, Tasmania, Pago Pago, learn to raise goats, grow food, and eat the part that you don't think, that you think is not poisonous. Just read. These are people out there who believe this. And so they have lots of gold.
That's true. When you go out by the City of Commerce and stuff, they have nuclear shelters or bomb shelters.
Do you remember this slide from chapter 1? Now, over the last 200 years, which one would you have wanted to own? Stocks, bonds, treasury bills, gold?
I
think me too. When does gold do well? When the world's going to end. Civil War, Great Depression, World War II, and then gold started to do very well when inflation hit in the 1970s. But it peaked in 1981, and for 20 years fell 75%. Not quite, 60-some percent. Went from 800 down to 250. And then the last 10 years, it's actually done very well. Why? Because people believe the world's going to end. They believe that the government is printing out the Mayans. It's Obama.
Gold stocks?
Well, gold stocks can do well, assuming that the demand for gold is going to continue. Because gold is used for certain things, folks. It is used. But there are lots of alternatives. I remember I got gold in your teeth. I'm not a dentist, but my understanding is gold is still the best material to put in your teeth. Although there are others.
Diamond.
For what? Diamond. No, I don't think that's a good thing. You'll break the teeth around here. Right? I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not a dentist, but I don't think diamond. I mean, people encrust the diamond, but not in the part that you chomp on. Not in the part you talk to a dentist. Electronics. Very good for electronics, one of the best for electronics, but and silver. Silver is even worse. What was one of the biggest uses of silver?
Killing vampires.
Is that true?
Werewolves.
Photography film! And it was used in those little yellow boxes of Kodak film. How many people buy those now? You're right, right.
We have plenty of it.
The hipsters who still use film? Okay. I don't know that many. So, do you want gold?
No,
I don't think so. How about precious stools? Stools. Jewels. Sorry. That was the fly. Did you hear about the fly? Walked in, he flew into the bar and said, hey, I like that stool you're sitting on. Precious stones. Are diamonds a good investment?
No.
They're horrible. In fact, they make...
Show us a video then.
I showed you the video. I'm not going to show this. They make them. Now you can send your loved one. You can send your Fluffy, the dog, or your aunt, Uncle Lucas. You can take their ashes, send them to the company, and bring you back a diamond. Okay, how about collectibles? Rare coins, ceramics, Beanie Babies, Star Wars, Pokemon and other cards, baseball cards. What do you think? Yeah, if you enjoy it, you could actually make money off of it. But, there's a lot of crazy people in this world. There's a lot of people who love these things. And there are lots of scams, Well, people are into it. Dollhouses, they spent $5,000 for a dollhouse with lights and... there's the story of the guy who had $50,000 worth of Barbie dolls out in El Cajon. That's at least he claims he had. And one weekend, they all disappeared.
Poof.
Now, some fine art has clobbered everything else. You know, if you bought a Picasso back in 1950, it's worth tens of millions of dollars. And then it was worth a few $100,000 or $100,000. I don't know how much it was. But that is a tiny proportion of fine art. And so the guy who runs Christie's Auction, one of the two big auction houses, said it best. Do not buy art as an investment. Buy art because you enjoy it. Make sense? Yeah, that's it. Okay. The maximum capital gains tax rate on most all investments is currently 15% and could be as low as 5%. The capital gains tax rate on precious metals, art, and collectibles is 28%. None of these investments are eligible for tax-qualified accounts, with the exception of gold coins minted in the United States. So, is the Congress trying to tell you something? Yeah. Unless you really enjoy it, folks. Unless you love to collect Beanie Babies or... I had a student who was a big collector of comic books. And he had picked up, because they're always coming out with new comic books, new heroes. He picked up the very first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. He picked it up and he was looking at it and he was thinking, maybe I should. And nah. If he had grabbed onto
that. How did he know that it was the first one?
Because it says, you know, new edition, special, it's a big deal. But that's, are you into comic books? My understanding is every month there's a new one. Maybe not every month, but it's very... They come out with new characters all the time, and you don't know which ones are going to do well. So you would spend a fortune just buying every new comic book that came out and putting it in a plastic wrap and holding it, and maybe one of them will be worth $9,000 20 years from now or something, if you're lucky.
Right.
Because most of them just disappear after a couple of months. If it doesn't sell well, they just get rid of it.
Yeah.
So now, real estate. Who wants to invest in real estate? Well, folks, you know, this is a very good opportunity right now. It's not without its problems. In fact, the PETA factor. Remember we talked about the PETA factor? You got to know that the PETA factor of real estate is way high. There are two ways to invest in real estate. There is direct and indirect. And most people, when they think about real estate investments, are thinking about direct investments, where your name is on the property, your name is on the title. Your home is a great investment, folks. It's a home first, in my humble opinion. But when people would say to me 20 years ago, say, why are you always investing in stocks? Why don't you invest in real estate? Well, we have a house. So I'm just diversified. Plus, real estate's too damn expensive in San Diego. And see, but it's always going to go up. So, well, I want income. I don't want to buy it for speculation. Maybe it won't go up. It always did until 2006. But I didn't like it. But that was me. So your home is your hedge, if you will. It's part of your diversification. Rental property is a whole course unto itself. And, in fact, we teach real estate here. And we used to have lots of classes.
Online, though.
It's all online now. But we used to have lots of classes in real estate until... bust. During the boom, after the bust, after the kaboom, right, the boom. Undeveloped land is the biggest potential gain from real estate, but it also is the riskiest. Because there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to develop it, and you still got to pay the property taxes, and it's not bringing in any rent. There's an old saying in the industry, never invest in dirt. Now, somebody has to, right? you may later on down the line get involved in real estate in a big way and be ready later on after you've built up a portfolio of real estate investments. But don't make undeveloped land your first choice. Look, it's out in Anza-Borrego. It's $20,000 and it's 300 acres and it's off for sale. It's a tax lien. Because the previous sucker bought it and gave up trying to develop it and stopped paying the property taxes, and so now looking for another sucker to buy it and pay the property taxes. Indirect investments are more up my alley, at least until a while ago, because indirect investments, you don't have to worry about toilets, you don't have to worry about tenants. You are basically letting somebody else run them. And for most of us stock jockeys, now that you understand stocks pretty well, REITs are a great choice. They stand for Real Estate Investment Trust. And isn't it the best name, though, too? Cool, REIT. That's what REIT. That reminds me of Reedy Old Righty. REIT. Anyway. These things, you can think of them like stocks. They look like stocks for all practical purposes, but they're not corporations. They are trusts. And so when you go into a Walmart or a Target or a Vons, do they actually own that property? Very rarely. Sometimes they do. Sears owns a lot of their own property, but they've been around for 100 years. They lease that property for 40, 50 years. And the Real Estate Investment Trust runs it. They run it, and they then collect the rent, and if the property gains in value, capital gains, and they pass through, like a mutual fund, to the investors, the rent and the capital gains. So it's a great way to invest in real estate and not have to deal with the PETA factor.
How do you compare
it? They look like stocks. Let's take a look at one. Exactly. Let's take a look at one that's actually based here in San Diego called Realty Income Corporation.
How did you find out about that?
I was really big on these things in the late 90s because they were paying tremendous. Normally a REIT will pay 6-7%. It's not dividends, they're fees from operations. They look like dividends, but legally they're different. But now they're paying really low. They're not paying very well. In the late 90s, they were paying 10%, 11%, because nobody wanted them. I remember this one investor at the brokerage firm saying, "Why would you want to buy a REIT? In just a few years, all the shopping centers will be out of business. Nobody will be going to the mall anymore. Why?"
Because of the internet.
Yeah, everything you're going to buy online. I just want to say, lady, you are... Because I knew a whole lot more about computers than she knew about computers at the time, and I thought she was nuts. And so we bought this one REIT. It's now got somebody else bought it. It's pretty private. But, oh, boy, did it do... I didn't expect it to do so well. Pan Pacific, yes.
I guess I did. Where do you start looking up?
I told you Realty Income, right? So a symbol O. They grabbed O. I don't know why, because you could goof up with a zero, but that's what they wanted. And then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Competitors, industry, and you go, okay, these guys are only paying 4%. That's not really good for a REIT. Let's take a look at some of their competitors. And there's Kimco and where's Simon? They don't have Simon. There's Simon Properties. That's one of the bigger ones. Kimco's one of the bigger ones, too. Let's see what Simon Property Group is paying.
Kimco.
Look at that. 2.6%. That is horrible. Look at the PE. 51. I'd stay away from these things now, folks. I'm not a big fan of REITs right now. The PEs were 6 in the late 90s. That's for Simon Property Group. What was Kimco? Let's go see. Let's look at their competitors. Kimco. Where is it? Oh, poopy balls. Back. Kimco. There, Kim, I knew that. PE 56, 55. 3.5%? I'd stay away from these. That's my personal opinion. That's why there's coffee and chocolate. No, coffee and tea, and some people like chocolate. Cocoa. I'm getting into the semester, folks. I'm really losing this. Let's get through this faster. That's why there's chocolate and vanilla. And some people like strawberry. That's why there's coffee or tea, and some people like cocoa.
Like GGS or whatever that you see, like with the yellow and black sign. Are they
a REIT? Who? Like GGS, GGS. Oh, Alice. I think that's a real estate development firm. No, you're talking about Burnham?
They have like a yellow and black circle.
I think they might, Ellis, I think they may actually be a construction firm. Look it up. Look it up. Find them out. That's what investing is about. You get a little, ooh, let's look that up. Ooh, this looks promising. Or no. Syndicates, partnerships, credits, equity sharing. The only one I'd be interested in is equity sharing. You put up the down payment for someone else, and then you share in the appreciation. And we talk about this in quite some detail in the 121 class. The young folks just starting out may not have a down payment. The parents, the grandparents might have $40,000, $50,000 that they would want to invest in. It doesn't have to be family. It can be, you know, strangers, partners. But you, as the elderly couple, put down the $50,000 down payment. The young couple buys the home. Well, everybody's name is on the title. They live in it. They pay the mortgage. They keep it up. And as it appreciates in value, you share in the appreciation. So after 5-10 years, the young couple might want to pay off the parents. They pay them a down payment back and any shared appreciation. Sell the place, buy another one, or refinance. Cool. Very good. Okay. Now, commercial property. Ooh, forget it, folks. Commercial property in San Diego is a fortune. It is outrageously expensive.
Is that really better to just build it from the ground up?
Yeah. No? Get involved in the industry, work at J.P. Ellis or J.B. Burnham, whatever his name is, and then learn about it from the inside. Because you need some deep pockets. You need some, you know, I mean...
Yeah, but it's like if it was one or the other... Well,
the problem is in San Diego, all the developable land is already grabbed.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. So, I have a friend who, I think I've told him about before, but he's a little crazy, but he's actually a pretty good investor. And at the end of it, this is like 98, he was jumping up and down trying to get everybody he could to come up with money to buy this hotel downtown OB, which is now an international hostel. I don't know if you've seen it. It was selling, I forget, 460 or something like that. It needed a lot of work.
Really?
460,000 or something, 440,000. And 2006, at the height of the bubble, you could not have touched that place for under $3 million. So that's how much real estate, commercial real estate, jumped. Downtown San Diego storefronts were selling for about $1 million at the end of the 90s. 8 years later, they were selling for $8 or $9 million. Just insane. So, forget that. How about fixer-uppers? Concentrate on smaller properties first. Get a duplex, live in one, rent out the other one. Banks, well, the world is changing very quickly. But during normal times, banks do not usually want to lend to a distressed property. So if there's a property that's run down, the person wants to, they've been renting it out for 30 years in nasty city or who knows where, they will often say, okay, you got a down payment and you're willing to take it over, I'll be the bank, the owner. You pay them and they're looking for income in their retirement, so you basically take out a mortgage with them because banks don't want to deal with those. But banks are usually very happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books. They want to get rid of it. If it's a rundown foreclosure, they want it off their books. Now, that's during normal time. In 2008 and 2009, they had so many foreclosures, they still have a lot of them. They didn't know what to do with these things, so they were just hanging on to them. Eventually they would sell them, but it would take 2 or 3 years to foreclose. It's changed. In the last few months, prices have really jumped a significant amount. Not a whole lot, but it used to be, just a couple of years ago, it was unbelievable. You just wave your hand around and all these foreclosures. And I was lucky enough personally to get a few, but right now it's getting harder. Avoid property managers, folks. I'm getting lots of come-ons from property managers now. I don't know how they must have some really good. They must know how many properties we have now because they must aggregate this data somehow. Because I keep getting things in the mail. Oh, wouldn't you like to be living on the beach while we take care of your property? I know what you want. Most importantly, are you savvy dealing with repairs, and are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. One bad tenant can set you back a lot of money, folks. A lot of money, because they could just trash the place. Any horror stories? Yes, let's hear. How many units? Eight?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah, like some cooperative tenants, like they want to pay the rent, and they use like the heater or something, and then, or like the heater was broken or something, and then my dad ended up losing like a bunch of rent money. So
how many thousands? Just a few thousand?
I would think like 5 months of rent.
So, yeah, about 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000. How about this one? Change the oil of the motorcycle in the living room.
Oh, wow.
Hard to believe. Anyway, because they could. Yeah, it was raining outside. They want to get wet. This guy, great book. If you like to read, I know some of you would rather eat barbed wire than read, but this is a great book, and it's a lot of fun. And I don't fix anything, folks. I have Rolf, hey Rolf, Louise, Jose, help, Oscar, help. I have lots of help. And we talk about real estate investment trusts, pass-through investments, kind of like a mutual fund, but instead of investing in stocks, bonds, they invest in real estate, shopping centers, office buildings, warehouses, apartment complexes. Management fees typically range between 1% and 2%, kind of like a mutual fund. And their long-term return has been 7% to 8%. And over the long term, they're kind of like bonds in that. You get the rent is mostly what you get. Sometimes there's times when the capital appreciation becomes really valuable. But we already took a look at that. I'm a big fan of those, but not now. I think they're way overpriced now. So I stay away from these things. And then what are some of the advantages of real estate? Well, it's protection against inflation. Normally, when inflation goes up, real estate goes up. There's financial leverage, the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes, which allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own, because you don't buy real estate the way you buy stocks. You just don't do it. You come up with 20% down, or 25% down is what they want now for rental property. Whereas stocks, you have to come up with at least 50% down, and you're not going to do that because you saw how dangerous margining is. It's the same thing multiplied with real estate. But real estate partnerships, REITs, are easily liquidated. There's no management concerns. And one of the cool things is you can't check your price of the real estate every day on the Internet like people do with their stock. You run into the terminal. Oh, my God, it's going down. What do I do? And one of the disadvantages, liquidity. Liquidity is the big bugaboo of real estate. How easy it is to sell a house. How long does it take? 3, 6, 9 months, sometimes a lot longer. During the boom in the mid-2000s, yeah, right, you put the sign up on Thursday afternoon. By Sunday, Saturday, you had 5 or 6 offers. Sunday, you signed the sales agreement. But that's very unusual. It usually takes 6 months. Lack of diversification, how many properties can you buy? Although REIT, you know, the REIT buys a bunch. And then management, tenant concerns, and property values can decline. People say, no, they can't. Yes, they can. What is your home? Your home is a great asset, folks, because it's a home first and investment second. But there are some tremendous advantages. If you're willing to fix up a fixer-upper and sell it 2 years later, you get capital gains tax-free. Normally, whenever you buy an investment and then sell for a higher price, you got to pay capital gains tax. But if it's your principal residence, you can buy it for $100,000, sell it for $350,000, and not pay a dime of capital gains. That's how the law is now. If you're married, double it, $500,000. So what you'll hear people say is, my house is the best investment I've ever made. But in reality, it's usually the only investment they've ever made. Except for the penny stock their brother-in-law conned them into buying, which is now worthless, and the gold coins they bought 20 years ago and they thought the world was going to end. They don't even remember where they put them. I hope they're in their favorite deposit box. So my bottom line on your home is it's a home first. and investment second. Now you're going to hear from other people, mostly real estate agents, oh, no, 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 you don't understand. You're going to buy here, and then 3 or 4 years later, you're going to sell. I'm going to be your agent, right? And you're going to move over here, which is going to go even up in value, and then you're going to buy over here, and then eventually you're going to make yourself up the lawyer, up on the hill, where they do the boogie, and you're going to look down upon the peons and say, I made it. I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. What? If, what? What?
So, buy a home first, and then make it.
It's up to you. You know, everybody's different, but you got to live somewhere. That's the nice thing about a house. Yeah, you got to live. Well, some people, you got to live somewhere. Unless you want to live outdoors. Unless you want to live outdoors, you're going to live somewhere. And a home has been, during normal times, a very good investment. Now, an awful lot of people got destroyed in 2008 and 9, and we'll see. We're going to do a couple of those. Are we going to do a couple? I think I haven't done. But yeah, if you have a long-term perspective, a home, especially in San Diego, it's not like San Diego is becoming less desirable, yeah?
Is it,
Well, what's the big difference? You're right. It, I mean, did I give you one of these? You got one of these? Who didn't get one of these yet? The big difference between a car and a house is that during normal times, what happens to house prices? They go up. Is that true for homes? I mean, is that true for cars?
No.
Some cars, but very, very, very few. Most cars become worth a whole lot less. Did you get one? Okay, here you go. But, so, and remember, you gotta, unless you want to live outdoors, you gotta live somewhere.
So,
well, some people will choose a boat. It's not the easiest life, but some people will love boats. In fact, you can, you know, if you can find a boat that's anchored somewhere that's cheap, it can be very cheap rent, because boats normally depreciate in value, like cars and motorhomes, and houses appreciate. But you'll see, you'll see. You'll take, if you haven't taken Business 121, then go do Chapter 7.
How about the manufactured homes?
Manufactured homes are a great bargain. And there's a, and mobile homes, and they have a bad rep. The problem with manufactured and mobile homes is that unless you own the land, what's going to happen to the value of that house? It's going to depreciate like an RV, like a car, like a boat. If you own the land, it's going to appreciate. In San Diego, try to find the land. It's very difficult because the developers have grabbed it all up. You have to go out to East County if you really want to do that. Forget East Lake. I'm talking Habul. Habul. You have to go to Habul. I love it. It's a great name, Habul. Have you ever been to Boulevard? I mean, it's out there. You know, it's out. Yeah, no. So don't get me wrong. I think a home is a great investment. But it's your home first. Right? After you've bought your own home, then you may lay it down on the line, want to buy some rental property. Or you might want to go the other way around. Think if you lived in a little apartment, you know, you're paying $1,000 or $800, $900 a month rent, and you buy a rental property and allow that to increase in value and hopefully bring in some cash every month. Some people will do that. You understand? Everybody's different. But most people don't want to have their own home because it's their home. But that's up to you. Anybody want to move away from San Diego? Jessica? Usually there's one or two people say, yeah. I ain't staying here. I know, it's just too damn expensive, right? You look around and go, but back where I live, I could get a house for $80,000 that's, you know, just as big as that $500,000 house. And you get a basement. You go back east.
Can you build basements here in attics?
Good luck.
As far as...
It's all granite. It's really, the ground is very... Well, it depends on where you are. But, no, it's just not done. earthquakes. We have earthquakes. It's just, I mean, some people have basements. There are some houses in San Diego that have basements.
You have to just build it differently.
Build it differently. Plus, it'd be a fortune. Forget it. It's not going to happen. Okay, let's get out of here. Prices in San Diego have gone down in the past, and I shouldn't really change this because...
What?
Well, people used to tell me, but San Diego, it never goes down. What are you talking about? It's gone down in the past. And it didn't look like it'd ever go down again until 2008 happened. And they seem to have just, just last few months, just they bumped up about 10% or so. Yeah, they did. Yeah. And does that mean they're on their way back up? I don't know. If you plan on staying here, by all means, buy whatever you can afford. San Diego Skid Row, Nashville City are two of the best values in the region. It's a joke. I like San Ysidro. I like National City, folks. So I like these areas. Why? Because you can walk. You can walk. East Chula Vista? Nah! Nah. People, they go, you ride your bike through National City? You ride your bike through Barrio Logan? I say, yeah, it's really dangerous. Really dangerous. They got houses and kids and cars and shopping centers. Stay away. Don't expect to happen what happened in 2005 and 6 to happen anytime soon. It will. 20 years from now, people will get stupid again. It's capitalism. Boom, bust. Boom, bust. It doesn't end. I saw this in 1993. Because you see, in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, real estate did really well in San Diego. And people thought it would never end, and then in 91, 92, it fell about 20%. See, that's what I thought was going to happen in 2007, 8, 9. My buddy Jim, I was talking about the guy who wanted to buy the real estate. He said 50%. I said, I don't know, Jim, 20%, 25% like it did in 91, 92. And he said, no, it's gone down at least 50%. He was right. I saw this. I loved it. Please God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. I told this woman up in North County I talked with. You think she did in 2005?
Yeah.
Probably not. Okay, the perfect investment. Come on, Payano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. Well, beware the permanent trend. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 at the height then and sold in 94. And those who bought in early 2000 are still trying to unload that flipper condo before the bank forecloses. But if you plan to hold for the long term, you should do well in real estate, I believe. Doesn't mean I'm right. But I've been doing, that's what I've been doing the last few years. I've been buying real estate like crazy for me.
Well, essentially, when your home is, the home is paid off for, everything.
Yeah, that's another thing. Eventually, it's going to get paid off. By the way, there's no perfect investment. Folks were saying the same thing back in 1999. What about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, we already discussed leverage. But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Yes, as a matter of fact, but there are pitfalls. And I forgot to do the, did I do the worksheet on the back. Oh, well, forget it. We'll have to do that later. Wait a minute. Did you say that there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Yes. As the law stands now, as long as it is your primary residence, you don't pay any capital gains tax on the first $250,000 of gain if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. Buy your home for $200,000, sell for $700,000 if you're married. You pay no capital gains. And so some people are doing this. They're buying a fixer-upper, living in it for 2 years, fixing it up, selling it, and then doing the process over again. You have to wait 2 years. Have you seen the ad? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed surefire real estate investment kit for $395. Guaranteed. Or take our 2-day seminar, only $2,995. You'll be on your way toward riches beyond your wild dreams. Buy a home. Buy a house, make it your home. That's my advice. After you've digested that purchase, then look for some rental property. But learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it. Maybe even work for a property manager for a spell to get the feel for what you will need to be able to do. Ta-da! And that's that. Okay, on Thursday, we will do Baffle the Broker. If you have any questions still that you have, that you haven't answered, put them out here. We will also look at some sample problems from the final. And I'll see you on Thursday. Final is next Thursday, May 23rd. 8 o'clock.